You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Egypt's ex-army chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi just won nearly 100% of the votes in the country's presidential election. Certainly a great victory for him personally, but hardly an endorsement of Egyptian democracy after the Arab Spring, especially after the overthrow of the elected Islamist government headed by Mohamed Morsi of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Brotherhood now officially declared a terrorist organization by the Egyptian government, not even technically the opposition anymore. Egyptians are once again disillusioned, and satirist Bassem Youssef, who has tangled with the law over his brand of humor, speaks here.
So here it is. They think that they can get away by their own agenda, and they will tell you, oh, yeah, it's a democracy. You can say what you want, but do it. Be polite.
Yes.
Be nice. Be presentable. It's like, what is that?
Free on The Daily Show, but the problem for democracy in the Middle East and even in the United States, Shadi Hamin says, is a big problem. Ideological groups often benefit from elections at the expense of liberal pluralism. Hamid is the author of Temptations of Power, Islamists and Illiberal Democracy in a New Middle East.
I think we have to readjust our expectations. You can't have a revolution and then have liberal democracy overnight. Democracy takes a long time to play out, and we see that in transitions across the world, and not just in the Middle East. So there is going to be inevitably an initial phase where you see elected leaders maybe suppressing dissent or trying to pass illiberal legislation in the social arena and trying to push their ideas on the population through the democratic process. But you hope that over time, democracy self-corrects. And instead of having military coups, which end the democratic process as we know it, I think it would have been much more preferable to let these processes play out. And I think we're seeing that right now in Egypt, where the military steps in, you have less stability, you have unprecedented repression. I think it would be very difficult for anyone to argue that the situation now is better than it was under the Muslim Brotherhood, as disappointing as the Brotherhood was in their 1 year in power. And I think also, as Americans, it's a little bit challenging for us because we're small L liberals and small D Democrats. But what happens when those two values come into conflict and you have religious parties coming to power through democracy? And that's why I think the U.S. has had a lot of trouble with this, that we support democracy in theory, but we're not always comfortable with democratic outcomes in practice.
Your book speaks mostly of Islamists and in the Arab world in the Middle East, but I'm wondering if this is a much broader issue. I mean, we have in the European Union, all of a sudden, the election of people who want to do away with the European Union entirely, and they're going to have to deal with that. And one could certainly make an argument, don't you think, that in Israel, democratic institutions have really favored and allowed the development and growth of ultranationalist and religious parties, even in Israel.
Exactly. This notion of illiberal democracy isn't unique to the Middle East, even if it might be more pronounced there. And Israel is a very good example of where we see this outside of the Arab world, where you do have far-right religious parties that play a very important role in government and parliament. Or we can even look further afield to India. And just the other week, we see not just an illiberal prime minister elected, but a prime minister who was implicated in the past in being complicit in pogroms against the Muslim minority in India. Whether it's Hindu nationalism, the far right in Israel, or even neo-fascist groups in Europe, we see a general trend here. And I think that's the challenge in any democracy, is where do you find the right balance between respecting the will of the people and also protecting the rights of disadvantaged minorities?
Does it stretch the American notion of tolerance for, a different view of human rights, that it appears that what Egypt has done is basically deliver a never mind to the entire Arab Spring Revolution, which happened in 2010 and has essentially gone back to a kind of Mubarak system where the Muslim Brothers are now underground? Do Egyptians prefer this above-ground military rule with the Muslim Brothers tolerated but definitely in the background?
So this is the real challenge here, especially in the early phase of transitions. People usually say that they support democracy, But then the real test of it is when you have parties that come to power that threaten their personal interests or their way of life. And in the Middle East, you have this fundamental ideological divide between Islamists and secularists or liberals, and they have very distinctive worldviews and visions for their society. So what you end up having is really this zero-sum battle over the future of these states. And the more existential politics is, the less willing you are to accept your opponents. Instead, you want to destroy them. And that's what I think we've seen in Egypt. Now, there always have to be limits on what popular majorities can do. So no one is saying here that Islamists have the right to impose female genital mutilation or to disenfranchise Christian voters. But the question is, where do you draw the line? Where do you say that majorities can't do this, or what can they do? And the only way you can really figure that out is through a process of democratic bargaining and give and take through everyday politics. And we've had that in our own history as Americans, where you have a lot of these debates, but that has to be worked out.
What's the progressive model then in the Middle East right now? Is it the sort of disorganized, chaotic thuggery in Libya? Is it the sectarian nightmare that's taking place in Iraq right now? Or is it the benign autocracy in a place like Qatar?
I think what we're seeing is a new anti-democratic trend where a growing number of Egyptians and Libyans and Syrians are looking towards strongmen. They want this strong dictator who's a kind of protector and savior who can come in and bring order and stability. And that's a natural result when you have a democratic process that doesn't actually improve people's standard of living. And that was a big part of the Arab Spring, if you recall. It wasn't just about having the right to vote. It was also about dignity and being able to feed your family and improve their standard of living. But democracy doesn't bring that right away. It actually can be unstable in the short run. So I think a lot of Egyptians said to themselves, well, this isn't exactly what we had in mind when we were supporting the democratic process. So you have a general disillusionment, and I think more and more people are falling under this illusion that a strong man like General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi in Egypt, or even in Libya, where we're seeing the rise of militias and former generals who are trying to assert themselves through the use of force.
Shadi Hamid is a fellow at the Brookings Institution Saban Center and author of Temptations of Power, Islamist and Illiberal Democracy in a New Middle East. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.